Well, good evening and welcome to another 2 hours of Jewish soul music. I'm Charlie Bernhout, your host for this evening. This is my 27th show. How have you been? Well, it's been quite a week, and for those of you who have been following the events, you know that this week we commemorate the 15th Yahrzeit of Reb Shlomo Carlbach, and I was trying to figure out what should I be doing for this particular program, and then I was going through my recordings from the old radio show, and there it was, a two-hour special on October 23rd, 1994. It was Sunday night. The funeral was during the day, and that night was quite an impromptu program of music and interviews. And I decided that there'd be nothing better that I could do than to play for you many of those wonderful interviews and recordings of Reb Shlomo. But before we get to going back a little bit in history, I just finished an interview with Rabbi Naftali Citron, who is the rabbi of the Carlbach Shul here in Manhattan on 79th Street, West 79th Street. And to start the program, let's hear from Rabbi Citron.
I'm very pleased to have with me the rabbi of the Carlbach Shul, located on 79th Street in Manhattan, Rabbi Naftali Citron. Good evening, Rabbi.
Good evening, Charlie. Glad to be on the program.
Oh, it's a pleasure having you. You know, it's hard to believe that 15 years have gone by. It's almost like a blink of the eye.
Yep, it's 15 years. Everybody knows that 15 is the first two letters of Hashem's name. Is the Yud is 10 and then the Hey is 5.
Uh-huh.
So it's especially significant the Yahrzeit.
I'll be having a program dedicated to the rabbi this evening, and it was actually a special that I did on the Sunday that the funeral took place. And I assume that while this was being broadcast 15 years ago, the casket was on its way to Israel.
Yeah, I mean, this does bring back memories for a lot of people. The yard site, the burial, actually, obviously the time of Shlomo passed away, and the his body actually was in the shul for Shabbos.
Wow.
And then
wow.
He had a leviah outside of the shul on West 79th Street. Thousands of people flooded the area, closed off the streets, and then from there the bus took him to JFK, his body to JFK, or the hearse,
uh-huh.
Followed by buses of people who followed to JFK, and then the appropriate people were made sure to take care of the everything along the way that ended in Har HaMenuchos. So it's a very powerful memories of that time that nobody else could say of a kvura that was songs that were just coming, flowing from the people that were there. And until today, some of the closest people to Shlomo, you'll hear Shlomo's Nigunim at Levias of the closest people to...
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Very interesting. Before we go on, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you are related to the Rebbe?
Sure. My Shlomo was my great uncle. His twin brother, is my grandfather, Milchaim Carlbach, who I was privileged to have a close relationship with. I was privileged to have a close relationship with both from Shlomo and my grandfather, Billy Chaim. Both very unique, gifted people, and they both had a tremendous influence on me. And they actually were both co-rabbis here at the shul, Shlomo for a while longer, and my grandfather for nearly 10 years, being the rabbi here whenever Shlomo was on the road traveling.
Uh-huh. I love the spirit of your shul. I think it's so special for listeners who have never been there, for at least particularly for Kabbalah Shabbos, and also for Shabbos. It's so special.
Well, the energy here is really sometimes, as you say, Adlei Vashamayim. Just you can't help it. I don't know, sometimes I come here and I'm feeling a little down Friday afternoon. I don't know what's happening. Maybe I don't feel like I'm not the best Jew in the world. I'm not the best human being in the world. But something happens Friday night, the davening starts, and despite all of my flaws, I just feel just carried away and taken to a very deep place. I think that's one of the things about Shlomo and the chavra and the spirit that survives him and continues is that it can take you from the lowest of low places and for a moment bring you to the highest of high places, and you still can feel it here in the shul.
The shul is thriving.
The shul is thriving. Thank God, the music of Shlomo, the spirit of Shlomo continues, and we're trying to not just have it be a musical show, but a real show that's imbued with the spirit of Hasidus, of the way of the Baal Shem Tov. Shlomo was a continuation of. Shlomo wasn't just a unique individual. He was that as well, but he was also part of a greater whole. And to be seen as somebody who was breaking the mold as others who had come before him had also broken the mold. All in the way of reinvigorating people's love of the Holy One and of each other.
A lot of people are not aware of his relationship with the Lubavitcher Rebbe.
He was very close to the Friedrich Rebbe. In fact, as a member of the family, I was privileged to hear both of the schuris, the merits, the special place that both of Shlomo and his brother, my grandfather, Billy Chaim, had with the Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, known as the Friedrich Rebbe, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, who already had given them a very intense bracha when they were children in Vienna, near Vienna, when the Rebbe was there, going to a relaxing there, recovering from the stresses that he had. And when the Rebbe came to America, Shlomo and Billy Chaim went to see him come off the boat, and he recognized them even though they were many years older. They didn't look at all the same as they were when they were little kids, and they became Hasidim. They decided that they were going to go to Lubavitch. It didn't happen in 1 minute. It happened over number of years of a lot of anguish on their parents' part that were not ready to give them over to the Hasidim, so to speak, and a lot of back and forth. But the Friedrich Rebbe considered them like his children. I've read letters where he says that by the bracha that I gave them, that was to more or less fulfill the bracha that he gave them, that they would succeed in learning Torah, that was more or less fulfilled. He acquired them as his children, and he was fighting back and forth with Shlomo's father and mother about the kids, about whether they could be learning in Lubavitch or in Lakewood. Both Rebbe Lechaim and Shlomo learned in Lakewood. My grandfather got out relatively early. He didn't even make a full year in Lakewood. Shlomo, on the other hand, spent a number of years in Lakewood and was considered of Aaron's favorite Talmud and his most promising Talmud of that time. But then he did go to Lubavitch as well, and they say Barn was not happy about that. and that's kind of the lore that's true. And from there, Shlomo started his outreach. I heard him Shlomo say in Lakewood, they taught me that everything is Torah. And in Lubavitch and Chabad, they taught me that everything is people. So that when I was in Lakewood, everything was about the Gemara. I was learning nonstop, day and night. And then I came to Chabad, and all of a sudden it was like, can you talk to people? Can you get through to people? Can you connect to them? And then from there he learned that if he went somewhere, he had to, in his own words, he said he had to find a victim. He had to find somebody on the train that he could talk to and connect to and get them inspired by Yiddishkeit. So that became his new thing, was to connect to people and to bring them closer to Torah.
Well, he certainly did that as no one else has done. And I don't know if you are aware, but I started this hobby 32 years ago, and Reb Shlomo Carlbach and Ben Sion Shenker had the two greatest influences on me, and I've always been a great admirer of Reb Shlomo. Now, I understand that you have a very exciting event coming up this coming Motzi Shabbos.
Every website we are honored to host a Malava Malka, a concert, and we always have a number of really good musicians, singers that are performing the music of Reb Shlomo. And it's a great, every year it's Manish really just gets, you can't imagine it, but it seems to get better every year.
Uh-huh.
And this year we're doing a whole Shabbaton this weekend at the Carlbach Shul, and then Saturday night the concert is going to take place at Westside Institutional.
Great.
On 76th and Columbus. And we have a great lineup of really great musicians who put themselves so much into these nigunim. We have our own Chazen, Yehuda Green, who's really doing a great job of continuing Shlomo's work. Both of Shlomo's nigunim and other nigunim, his own nigunim that are really so beautiful. Shirley Berger, who's been there for many years now, coming every year to the yard site and participating, also lends his voice to the Friday night Kabbalah davening over the years of his influence and his CDs.
Mm-hmm.
And Ellie Kranzler from Riverdale, whose mom is the sweetest of the sweet. Everybody knows he's got such a sweet, beautiful voice. And Eitan Katz, who along with his brother Shlomo Katz, who won't be there, but their mom is, you know, continuing doing their own music in amazing ways. And Pidalid, the Pidalid brothers, who are also a Gaval, and it's really a great, it's a great lineup, it's a great evening, and more.
Now, will people be able to get tickets at the door, or do they have to reserve?
Yeah, you can get tickets at the door. If you want a little discount, you have to call the shul right away, or Kalbachshul.org. Selling tickets, it's a $10 discount if you can get it online.
Okay.
For the next, you know, it's only available for the next day or so online, uh-huh. And then afterwards you can just go to the door.
Right.
And it's pretty reasonable, 25 in advance, 35 at the door.
Okay, so
you can't really get a show like that in the city anymore.
No, that's for sure.
And you can't get a show like that for any price, really.
For sure. So they can go to www.carlbach.com?
Carlbachshul.org. CarlbachShul.org.
Carlbachshul.org. Okay,
yeah.
So
we're not just making a profit. So.
Well, we never make a profit. We know that. All the concerts we ever made, we're happy if we didn't lose too much. But this happens to be a wonderful, wonderful event for those who are fans of the great Reb Shlomo Carlbach. And you can either, if you're in the city, go there for Shabbos. Or go to the Westside Institutional, which is on 56th Street, I believe.
No, it's on 76th
Street. Oh, 76th, I'm sorry. 76th Street.
You know. I know you know.
Oh, yes. 76th Street, just off of Columbus.
And we have a lot of things going on at the show all the time, and in particular this weekend, so everybody who's, you know, can make their way down to the show. We're still here, 305 West 79th Street. We've been here over, you know, 60 years.
Yes.
It's been in the hands of the Kalbach family for 60 years now. And it's great to be able to daven in the place that not only Shlomo davened in, the Reb Chaim davened in, but their father, Nafeli Kalbach, was the Rav here.
Uh-huh.
And you get a sense of the history and the connection to the people that have been here that come back. Even if they don't live here anymore, some of them come back for the Yortzei Shabbos and other special Shabbos, and it's great to. It's always great to see the old-time chevra. It's such a special that the people who knew Reb Shlomo, who were influenced by him from 15, 20, 30 years ago, there's something special about them. They really,
yes.
he connected to them and made some really special people, help them be very spiritual and good people.
Well, I thank you for taking the time to share these thoughts with us, and I'm sure it will be successful. I'm going to try and be there together with Helen. And
you better be there.
Okay. Rabbi Naftali Citrin of the Kalbach Shul has been sharing these thoughts with us, and I only wish you hatzlacha with all your endeavors.
Thank you, Charlie. I'm always pleased to see you when you're in shul. It makes me happy. Gives me a big smile, and hopefully we'll see you Saturday night. We'll see you over the weekend.
Okay.
And Shikara for all your listeners who appreciate and keep alive the spirit of Jewish music.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Shalom.
You.
Okay, that was Rabbi Naftali Citrin, and once again at the Westside Institutional Synagogue this coming Motzi Shabbos. There'll be a commemoration concert for Reb Shlomo Kalbach. Tickets are available. It's at 120 West 76th Street. And those of you who are in the city, if you're listening to this, you can still perhaps go for Friday night dinner at the shul and partake in the wonderful Shabbos at the Kalbach Synagogue. Okay, by the way, as I was listening to the interview and as I was listening to the interviews that you will be hearing throughout this program, I realized that I have to get my phone connection back because that was certainly something very special. I enjoy it, and I know that you enjoy hearing the comments and the interviews. Okay, before I get on to going back 15 years ago, I want to set the scene. First of all, I was at Seton Hall University. I guess I started in I was FMU in 77, and around 79, 80, I went to Seton Hall till 1995. So if you hear me mentioning Seton Hall University, you'll know that for many, many years, I was there with 2 hours of Jewish soul music until somewhere around 1995 when I had my problems concerning comments that I made about terrorism and Islam, but that's for another time. Okay, October 23rd, 1994, that's when this forthcoming program was aired, and the funeral was that morning, that Sunday morning of October 23rd. As Rabbi Citrin said, it was outside on 79th Street, outside of the shul. Now, what had happened that week? Again, you'll hear some references to a situation of historically what was happening. 5 days earlier, in Tel Aviv, 23 Jews were killed on a bus and 75 were injured. That was Wednesday, October 19th, just a few days. Rabbi Kalbach died on Thursday, and this was Wednesday. This was the terrorist attack. The Lubavitcher Rebbe had died in June of 1994. In 1993, the Oslo Accords, the terrible Oslo Accords came about under Clinton, Arafat, and Rabin and Peres. It legitimized Arafat and brought about the death of injury to thousands of Jews unnecessarily. But let's go back. 1993, February 26th, the North Tower of the World Trade Center. Terrorist bombing six were killed and over a thousand were injured. By the way, that was 1993, so we know what happened just 8 years later, 9/11, 2001, when the World Trade Center was attacked by the terrorists. By the way, it's interesting, we won't go into history too much, but had they gone after those involved in the World Trade Center attack in 1993, they would have found a lot of information that perhaps could have prevented the 9/11 situation. One other thing that was happening at the time, and it will be perhaps mentioned the following week, the following Sunday, after this program. This program was on Sunday night, but the following Sunday, I ran my third annual Cantrillo concert at the State Theater in New Brunswick, which featured Naftali Herzlich, David Bagley, Alberto Mizrahi, and Danny Goldar as accompanists. So that's a little bit of the history as to what was going on at the time that this program that you're going to be hearing right now. Again, let's go back to October 23rd, 1994. This is Sunday evening. Welcome to another 2 hours of Jewish Soul. This is your host, Charlie Bernhout. Each week, we bring you the best in cantorial, Yiddish, Israeli, and American Jewish music. We come to you from WSOU at Seton Hall University in beautiful South Orange, New Jersey. The phone number here is 201-761-9768. That's 201-761-9768. Well, in the background, we hear the late Reb Shlomo Kalbach, died this past Friday, the funeral was this morning, and the body is on its way to Israel, perhaps in Israel at this moment. This was quite a week. Disaster in Tel Aviv earlier this week. Reb Shlomo dying on Friday. Our show this evening will be dedicated to the memory of Reb Shlomo Kalbach. And during Chazonis, we'll be playing certain appropriate cantorial selections that reflect our feelings and our pain as to what's going on in Israel. More on that later. Let's get back to Shlomo Kalbach. Israel, 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 It's hard to believe that he's gone. Shlomo Kalbach, rabbi, songwriter, 69 years old. As I'm quoting from the obit this past Saturday, Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach, the foremost songwriter in contemporary Judaism, who used his music to inspire and unite Jews around the world, died on Thursday at Western Queens Community Hospital. He was 69 and lived in Manhattan, Toronto, and Moshav Ur Modi'in, Israel. The cause of death was a heart attack, according to his sister-in-law, Hadassah Kalbach. Rabbi Kalbach put the words of Jewish prayer and ceremony to music that is heard at virtually every Jewish wedding and bar mitzvah, from Hasidic to Reform. In a recording career that stretched over 30 years, the rabbi sang his songs on more than 25 albums. His most famous song was Am Yisrael Chai, which was an anthem of Jews behind the Iron Curtain before the fall of communism. It continues to be sung at Jewish rallies and celebrations today. We will hear more from this, and we'll be dedicating at least the first hour, perhaps part of the second hour, to his music and to some comments from our listeners. And we're just trying to set up the mic to receive your phone calls, but we do have some comments that we'll be hearing. We'll go to one of his earliest albums. Actually, his first two albums were Haneshoma Loch and Borchi Nafshi, and I'll be playing some of his early selections. Let's hear Mimkomcha. This is from the album Haneshoma Loch.
Yeah. That was from the first album 30 years ago or so, on the Shomoloch.
Have with me our good friend Arnie Young from Clark, New Jersey. Good evening, Arnie.
Good evening, Charlie. How are you?
Okay. I know that you had quite varied experiences with Reb Shlomo.
Yes. I must tell you that he was a legend in his own time, and he provided we, the Jewish people, with a tremendous amount of spiritual feeling regarding how we reach God. And Shlomo had this uncanny ability to be able to reach God through music. I mean, music was his communicator, and he also communicated it to the people whom he was with. I had the privilege of being at five or six of his concerts, and I don't think there was a person there that felt that they weren't somehow in connection with something spiritual during these concerts. He was very, very, he was a devout individual in terms of his feeling for Jews, his feeling for Israel. He performed at a concert in our shul, Temple Beth Or in Clark, some 7 or 8 years ago. And I picked him up at his apartment in New York and brought him in. And he spoke about Israel, and he spoke about his love for the Jewish people, and that God had given us this land for us to protect, and for us to love, and for us to pretend, for us to be there, and for us to also sing praises. That was his thing. His thing was to constantly sing praises to God. I had the privilege of spending some time with his brother Eli, who was a great writer, who passed away, Avshalom, who passed away a couple of years ago. But Shlomo is somebody who we will sorely miss. And as Nachum Siegel put it, Yasher Koach to you for what you have provided for the Jewish people, because he did provide a tremendous amount of spirit and spiritual music that will live on forever.
Well, certainly when we use the phrase soul music, he epitomized soul music.
Absolutely, absolutely. He was able to touch everybody, and in a very, very special way. And as a matter of fact, I know that you and I had been discussing the opportunity of a concert soon that we're going to put together, and you know, I mentioned his name, and you know, he would have been, you know, certainly one of these people that would have participated. So he's going to be there in spirit, and I think that spirit is going to help tremendously.
You know, we all have our regrets for things undone, and quite frankly, I had called several of the phone numbers that I have for him over the past few months with the hope of having a two-hour Shlomo Carlbach special with him here at the studio, and it's certainly a regret of mine that... number one, I didn't do it earlier, and number two, that he didn't, certainly, of course, that he died so suddenly, and we just weren't able to do it. But I have always loved his music, and my regular listeners know that he has been one of my favorites, and he's one of the real originators of the whole new wave of Hasidic music. And
is one of our great folk singers.
Yes, and his music will live on.
Yes, absolutely. His music and his neshama will live on with us for many, many years to come. And he's provided us with a tremendous legacy, in that we should communicate in song as well as prayer, you know, to communicate with the Almighty.
Okay, Arnie, thanks for your comments.
Very much, and my best to you and to all your listeners, and we lost a very, very dear friend.
Yep.
Take care.
That was my friend Arnie Young, and let's go back to Shlomo Carlbach's, Reb Shlomo Carlbach's second album, and Borchi Nafshi.
Borchi Nafshi Es Hashem, Borchi Nafshi Es Hashem. Borchi nafshi
From Reb Shlomo Kalbach's second album, Borchi Nafshi.
I have with me on the phone right now two friends from Highland Park, Meir and Tova Friedman. Good evening.
Hi, good evening.
Hi, Charlie.
I understand that the two of you had some interesting experiences with Reb Shlomo.
Well, my first experience was when I was a college student at Brooklyn College. I think it was 1959, when he was a beginner at the time, he came to Hillel, and I recall it as if it were today. He came with his guitar, and we were just amazed at this rabbi who just within 10 minutes changed the whole atmosphere at Brooklyn College Hillel. He started dancing and singing, and we never heard of him before.
Uh-huh. That must have been exciting.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was a fantastic experience. I still remember, as if it were today, he sat on a table before he started dancing. He just sat right down on the table with his guitar, and it was a wonderful evening.
Well, why don't you tell them about the time we met Rabbi Kalbach in Israel when we were on the Ulpan. We were at the Ulpan Ben Yehuda in Netanya.
What year was that?
67, right during the war. We came to the Ulpan just before the 67 war, and we were there during the war, and it must have been either in the last day or two of the war or in the day or two just after.
Right.
When? Go ahead, Ray.
Well, it was, I think, a hospital, or it was a
field. It was a recuperating home for soldiers, right
uh-huh.
behind, right on the beach, right behind the Ulpan.
Right.
Netanya.
And it was an evening, and we went to visit the soldiers. And there he was. He was so full of love and joy. He walked over to every soldier. They were wounded. They were sitting. They were in their chairs. And he just kissed every one of them. He took their heads in his two hands, and he just kissed them. And he said, look, what you have done for us, for the Jewish people and for our country, we'll forever be grateful to you. And he went to every soldier. We were just, it was so amazing. He was crying. And then he started the dancing and the singing, and the soldiers that could join joined in. Some of us were volunteers or just people from the community. We joined with him. It was a wonderful, wonderful, very, very touching evening.
Yeah.
It was amazing. My recollection from a long time ago, I can't actually recall. He must have appeared, I think it was a town hall, although I don't think it was Carnegie Hall. I think it was town hall, if I remember. When he appeared, and we saw him that is, I saw him at that time. Truly, truly amazing experience. I have to say that he wasn't all that well received at that time. A lot of people thought it was kind of strange, and it took a while to have his real self come through. He was so good, and he was so full of joy and love and life that you couldn't believe he was real. And it's over the years, and I'd met him several times after that and heard him, of course, many times, came to know how truly spiritual, how truly this man felt love for those around him. And that was just so wonderful to understand and realize that those feelings that we had were real. That is, it wasn't a man putting on an act, but this was his spirit coming through. And what he did for the Jewish people, for Jewish music, I mean, will be remembered forever. He was just amazing, and I will miss him sorely.
Yeah, it's shocking to hear that he won't be here anymore. I think we saw him, we went to a concert the last maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and again, I couldn't, it was a small concert at the temple, and again, I saw that the same spirit was there. That's 30 years apart from the first time I saw him, and yet he had the same. He evoked in me the same feeling of real love.
I can see where it's hard to believe that because we're such skeptical people, we human beings, to believe that someone could be so loving.
I remember another rabbi. It was my rabbi at MIT. At that same kind of experience, a man was so good that you couldn't believe it was true, and you had to meet him many times and know him to know that...
It was sincere.
Was sincere, and mm-hmm. Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach was, as far as I can tell, and for me, forever, truly sincere and a true blessing to all who met him and to me personally.
Well, I thank you for sharing this with us, and this evening we're playing... some of our favorites, and his music will certainly live on forever.
You know, the great program, and thanks a lot,
Charlie.
Thank you,
Charlie.
Thank
you. Bye-bye.
That was Mayer and Tova Friedman, my friends from Highland Park. Let's go back to Reb Shlomo's first album, Hanashoma Loch, and his first selection on side one is Esau Einai.
Da 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 da. Thank you.
Reb Shlomo Kalbach from over 30 years ago, his first album, HaNeshoma Lach.
I have with me Velvel Pasternak, who is the leading Jewish musicologist in the world today. Good evening, Velvel.
Good evening, Charlie.
Velvel, I know you had a lot of experiences with Reb Shlomo. Can you share some of your thoughts with us?
Well, it's a little difficult today. There's quite a large void. I knew Shlomo Kalbach in a number of ways. First of all, I was a relatively young man when I first bumped into him in Town Hall. And later on, I really had the privilege of doing his second volume of music, which I notated for him. And just 2 years ago, a complete anthology of the music of Shlomo Kalbach. And he was a unique individual, and he'll be sorely missed.
People are talking about the number of songs that he wrote. Is there any idea of how many?
It's difficult to say. I mean, there's a lot that isn't in print. I mean, the book that I did for him 2 years ago has 140 pages in it and some 160 various melodies. I imagine he composed much more, but it's not the sheer number that's important. It is that he really was the front or the resource for all of those who came after him. He really started a trend in this new music, which we have sometimes called neo-Hasidic music or yeshivish music. He's really the one who did it, and everyone has to look to him. And the other interesting thing is that of all of the, quote, composers and the young people who have come on the scene and composed melodies, his are really and truly, by and large, the ones that have lasted.
They certainly touch the soul. When we talk about soul music,
it's a very interesting thing. I've often said it. If you look at a piece of music of Shlomo Kalbach on paper, it really doesn't look like much from a point of music, and yet. When you sing it, I mean, there's something that's non-definable that makes you want to keep on singing it. And so some of his little nagunim that you'd never think mean a whole lot in terms of a musical masterpiece, yet have been taken on by the world and are sung. And that's the proof in melody writing. If you write a melody that the Jews all over the world from all walks of Jewish life, I mean, whether it's Reformed Jews or Conservative Jews or Reconstructionist Jews, everybody sang Shlomo's music. Everybody could sing it, and to tell you the truth, it caused a kind of Bruderschaft, a brotherliness. I mean, when you got together in a room and everybody sang a liturgically based text to a melody of Shlomo.
He had difficulty in early acceptance, in being accepted early, as I understand.
You know, anybody that is like Ari Goldman said yesterday, pointedly in the Times, he worked outside of the structure. Anyone that deviates from a norm and does something, you know, that is not quite traditional in his attempt to bring people closer to things Jewish, you know, is often by the straight-laced, organized religious community looked at with a kind of skeptical eyes. Shlomo had a passionate love for all people, no matter where they came from, and his music. I'll never forget when I was a young married, my wife and I went out to a hotel which has long been gone. It's long gone already, but this was in 1957, and as young couples will do sometimes, we left our home in Crown Heights at 11:30 at night with two other couples. We went to the Laurel Park Hotel, and we came in about 2:30 in the morning, and in the main ballroom of the hotel, we saw some 200 Reform young people, Reform Jewish young people, who were literally stoned to the walls, not with drugs, God forbid, but with the music of Shlomo. There he was sitting in the middle of the room with a candle, and here were these 300 kids from Nifty or wherever it was, literally high on his music and on his personality. I'll never forget that scene. It wasn't, these were straight, clean-cut kids who were just, they looked like they were in another world at 3 o'clock in the morning.
He did have a way of bringing out a certain fellowship among Jews.
Yes, and he had something else. If he would have appeared in town hall during his early years, dressed in a kapote or a bekeshe, a frock coat as we know it, and he would be wearing a beaver hat, a black, you know, hat that yeshivish people, then probably nobody would have paid attention. But he came out in the Belafonte open sport shirt, which became his white shirt, became his hallmark, with a vest, and he had a candelabra a la, what's his name?
The pianist.
Whose name eludes us.
Yes.
And just this kind of contradiction of seeing somebody in modern garb and singing tefillah, singing holy text was enough. It's something that the Jew in 1960, the young Jew, needed, to see a rabbi who could wear a Belafonte sports shirt and have a guitar strung over his shoulder, and then when he needed to drink a glass of water in the middle of his performance, would say a blessing, Shachon Yabidvaro. This caught the imagination of American Jews who were traditionally minded or who were not, and then to have his first recording arranged by Milt Okin, who was Harry Belafonte's arranger, and to be the first to have an American sound, truly an American sound, an American, how shall I say it? I mean, the Eastern European modality of the music was gone, and suddenly there was a refreshing kind of melody which said, hey, we're in America now, you know, we're going to borrow a little bit from our surroundings, just like the Hasidim of yesteryear borrowed from their surroundings musically, but we're going to turn it into a new kind of Jewish music. And he was able to do that with the strains of America. He put it on to the oldest strains of East European music, and he was very successful. Again, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, his songs, Essa Einai, Hanashama Loch, Am Yisrael Chai,
Ein Kel Okeinu, we just sang it.
And worldwide. I mean, people, I have to tell you this. I did some research at the Hecha Shlomo in the archives of the religious music in the Machon Musica Datit. It's a section that they have where they catalog all Jewish melodies. In 1970, when I spent a sabbatical year in Israel, I was asked to go through their files, and in the files, melodies of Shlomo Kalbach appeared that were credited to Lubavitch, to Babiv, to Mujitz, to anything. And I went up to the head man, whose name was Meir Shimon Geshuri, who was the expert on Hasidic music at the time, may he rest in peace, and I said, why? I mean, some people may not be, you know, all that grateful for the way he does these things, but why? You know, and the world knows that he wrote these melodies. Why are they credited to every other organization? And he threw up his shoulders, and I tell you, with great glee, I went through all of those cards, and with a big pencil, I scratched through all the other names, put down in large letters, Shlomo Kalbach.
That's quite a story. I have in my hand two albums. One is Borchi Nafshi. That's the Oaken, Milton Oaken album.
Right, and the first one...
And the Shoma Loch.
Well, those are the Milton Oaken albums.
Oh, those are the first two, by the way?
Those are the first two, yeah.
Because, you know, I have so many recordings, and they never give dates, and we really have to have... a record dating chart someday.
As a matter of fact, I said to him, may he rest in peace, many, many times, to find two clean copies of those recordings. And perhaps some of your listeners out there may have mint condition recordings, because no one seems to have them. And to really put those recordings out, because they are absolutely superior. I was able to convince the Welk Group in California, which is the Lawrence Welk organization, who had bought out Vanguard Records, and with it came a wonderful record of Shlomo's called Mikdash Melech.
Palace of the King, was it?
Silverman Orchestra.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, about 30 years ago.
Right.
And I was able to convince them, non-Jews, that Shlomo was a name that would be around for a long time, and 2 years ago, they manufactured Mikdash Melech. Now, the Lawrence Welk Group, and they put it out again. And
in CD now, yes.
The CD and a cassette, and that's done with the 70-piece orchestra. Shlomo recorded with that orchestra, the Benedict Silverman Orchestra, which was in Holland, and it's just a superior piece of work with his earlier Nagunim.
Gee, I hope I can get some of those recordings for my concert next week. a lot of interest.
If you stop by, we'll make them. I have to say this to you in all candor. It's going to be rather sad, but I think I heard already that there was a run on some of his material in Borough Park Friday morning after his demise, and that he is going to sell much better now posthumously. A little bit sad.
Yes.
A little sad.
Yes.
And I'm even afraid as his publisher, you know, and as the fellow who put out the music, to call my stores and I say that this material is available, which you pass by all these months and all these years, because it'll seem as if now I'm grubbing on. I'm in a little bit of a quandary. I have to tell you, I did his anthology of Jewish music, and most people stayed away from it like the plague. And there's no reason. And Ben C. and Solomon in Israel just came out with a wonderful book called Shlomo Shabbos, in which he has all of his Shabbos material. And that, too, we sent around to the stores. Shlomo, you know, now it'll go.
Yes, it is sad.
But I want you to know something. My wife told me that she was at the funeral today, and as she walked down, she heard the singing. And, you know, traditionally, we do not use music at a funeral since olden times.
Yes.
Today, I have to tell you, it was appropriate to sing his Nagunim.
Mm, yeah.
The appropriate.
Mm.
And I know, from the Camp Ramaz to the Camp Swigs to the Camp Morashaz, I mean, it's been all his music, and it's been the font of every band that plays at any traditional Jewish wedding, and one of them said to me, without Shlomo, we would have nothing to play all these years.
Interesting.
Because everything else has a period, you know, if you go to these from weddings, everything has a period that it's in for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Shlomo stuff is in. It's been in for 35 years and probably be in for the next 200 years.
Yes.
And it's something indefinable. I said something never in derogatory, but in my own fashion, that Shlomo was a man who really did not compose. He was a man who really did not sing. He was a man who really did not play, and all of that worked magnificently for him.
I love it.
Yeah, and I never meant that in any kind of derogatory format. I mean, it's not a voice that could compare with the great Jewish voices of our time, and certainly his guitar playing, by his own admission, left something to be desired. And as I said, his melodic writing was nothing that you'd write home about, and yet all of that worked. More than any other quote, the Baal Kiruv person was trying to do it, it worked, and he left a legacy that musicians are going to really study and wonder what it was in these melodies and in his personality that caused people to sing.
Hmm. Well, Velville, thank you for taking the time to share these thoughts with us. Velville Pasternak.
My pleasure.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Well, this is Charlie Bernhout, and this is October 26, 2009. And what you've been listening to is a special special tribute to Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach, whose funeral was that day of October 23rd, 1994, 15 years ago. So you've heard interviews and certain selections, and I will be continuing this for the second hour coming up. So hope you're not confused. I think my voice hasn't changed that much in 15 years, has it? I don't know about that.